You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom this afternoon. And again, tomorrow and Friday, I am Carl Frisch, Democratic strategist, syndicated columnist, partner at Bullfight Strategies, the progressive communications strategy firm here in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. It's a delight to be back here filling in for Tom. Big shoes to fill, and it's a big week. I know that you all will agree with me that Mitt Romney has had a no-good, bad week and a half, whether it was gaffing his way through the Olympics in London, whether it was his trip to Poland or Israel. It has been a mess, an absolute mess for this guy. And if it's any indication about how he would perform as our commander-in-chief went abroad, I think, you know, when they say that President Obama needs to stop apologizing for America abroad, it'd be really easy for the president to stop apologizing for America if Republicans like Mitt Romney wouldn't go embarrass America when they're overseas. But I can think of only one thing that would take the focus off of the gaffes of plenty Romney campaign, his tax returns, his you know, his overseas bank accounts. I can think of only one thing that would take that off the front pages and give the Romney campaign some solace, and that is naming his vice presidential running mate. Word has come out recently that he's scheduled a two-week bus trip in advance of the Republican convention. And think about the Republican convention for a moment. Tampa in August with Mitt Romney. I can't think of anything worse, actually. Nice and humid. Mitt Romney to get that crowd that's all warm and fuzzy, all energized. Horrible. Only one thing can take the attention off of all this stuff, and that is him picking his running mate. And it was one of his advisors who tweeted out a list of people who were on the proverbial short list. Some of those folks included, obviously not limiting the list, but Nikki Haley, Kelly Ayotte, for the senator from New Hampshire, Tim Pawlenty, the former governor of Minnesota, the former senator Rick Santorum, try not to laugh. I mean, that's a guy who thinks about gay sex more than I do, and I'm a gay man. Bobby Jindal of Florida, I don't know how he would do it. I know that 30 Rock only has one more season, so maybe he can get out of his contract playing Kenneth the Page. Marco Rubio, the senator, the half-term senator from Florida. Paul Ryan, the Eddie Munster-looking congressman from Wisconsin. Former Speaker Newt Gingrich, I don't think he would take it, personally. He's got too much Tiffany's debt to pay off. Rob Portman, the senator from Ohio, who ran budgets and economics for Bush, so he's got that going for him. Condoleezza Rice is never going to happen. It's just never going to happen. And it's not because she's a woman, and it's not because she's African-American, both of which are, you know, hostile terrain for Republicans. It's because she's pro-choice and moderately pro-gay, and that just will not fly. That would cause a schism in the party, you know, bigger than anything since Mitt Romney securing the nomination. Bob McDonnell from Virginia and John Thune of South Dakota, who's actually who I think is going to get it. But we want to know who you think Mitt Romney will announce to be his vice presidential running mate, simply because he needs to get the stuff off the front pages, the gaffes, the taxes, and everything else. Give us a call toll-free, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. You can also go to Facebook. We've got this poll up on my Facebook page, facebook.com/Carl Frisch. That's K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H. Vote in the poll, and we'll keep you updated on who's winning the Veep Stakes within the Tom Hartman community. Go vote in that poll at Facebook.com/Carl Frisch, and we'll keep you posted and let you know who we think is going to be the nominee to join Mitt Romney on the most exciting ticket for president that was ever created. I can't think of anything more boring or dull. And the trick of the matter is that he can't pick anybody that's going to overshine him. I think John McCain learned that last time with the half-term governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin, who's now a phenomenal reality television star. He has to pick somebody who's boring, clean, articulate, and extremely conservative. That's why I think it's going to be John Thune of South Dakota. You may be thinking, who? From where? South Dakota is a state. I understand. I was researching this earlier. And he is the senator there. And the reason why I think it's going to be Thune is because he's been extremely vetted by National Democrats already. He ran against Tom Daschle and beat Tom Daschle, so you know they looked into every nook and cranny of this guy. And he's extremely conservative, and the reason you've not heard much about him is because he's kept his nose down and out of trouble, and you just don't see him that often, which is probably a pretty good route to take if you want to be the vice presidential running mate. You know, there's not going to be a lot of stuff that pops up about him other than him being very, very conservative. But it could be anybody at this point, anybody at all. So go vote online, facebook.com/Carl Frisch. We'll let you know who you think. You can even put your own nominations in. Give us a call and tell us who you think it's going to be and why. 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. You know, the post office is going broke. And if you hear Republicans talk about it, it's because, you know, they haven't kept up with the times, email and the internet, which all those Republicans, you know, completely understand email and the internet. You know, it's a series of tubes. And the reason is it's pretty simple to explain. And when you talk to your Republican friends, both of them, and your crazy uncle when he's over for Labor Day at your barbecue, you need to be very clear with them about why the post office is having economic problems. You know, neither rain nor sleet nor gloom of night will keep the post office from delivering its mail, so the saying goes. But I'll tell you who can keep the post office from delivering its mail. The Republican Party. no one ever thought it would be the Republicans that could beat out rain, sleet, and snow. But they are the reason that the post office is crippled at this point. For 44 cents, you can deliver a piece of mail from one side of the country to another in a matter of days. I mean, that's still remarkable today. And the reason that the post office is having problems today, and mind you, Republicans and conservatives and Tea Party activists should be absolutely outraged that this is happening, because the Constitution sets forth a framework for the Postal Service in its very document. It's not even in one of the amendments. It's in the Constitution. The reason that Republicans went after the post office, and I'll tell you how they did it. They passed a law, excuse me, in 2006 during the Bush administration, that the Postal Service, which that year handled the largest volume of mail that it had ever touched before in its 236-year history. And the legislation was called the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act, which sounds really nice. I mean, who doesn't want accountability and enhancement? I mean, it maybe sounds like a late-night mail enhancement pill, but it sounded good. And as Truthout's Allison Kilkenny reported at the time, congressional Republicans mandated that within 10 years, this is what this law did, within 10 years, the U.S. Postal Service would have to fully fund retirement health care benefits for the next 75 years. Or to put it more plainly, pardon me, the Postal Service had to dedicate a decade to fully fund the retirement health care benefits for future employees that will not even be born until the year 2057. There is not a company in this country, there is not a government agency in this country that has to fully fund the retirement benefits of employees that will not be born until 2057. Ridiculous. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. When we come back, we'll take your calls.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Who's it going to be? Who's Mitt Romney going to pick for his running mate? We'll let you know. Good to hear this, something. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Show. We are definitely family. Filling in for Tom today, I am Carl Frisch. You can find more about me at carlfrisch.com. And don't forget to go vote in our poll. at facebook.com/Carl Frisch. We want to know who you think the Republican vice presidential nominee will be. Who's it going to be? Tim Pawlenty, Rick Santorum, Michelle Bachmann, some crazy Republican state senator you've never heard of from Idaho. Wouldn't put it past him. But we've got other issues to talk about as well. Give us a call toll-free, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. We'll get to your calls in just a minute. Joining me now to talk about, actually, not quite yet, but let's go ahead and take Suzanne, who's listening in Seminole, Florida. Hey, Suzanne, what's going on?
Hey, Carl.
Yes. So who's it going to be?
Hey, I think it's going to be John Thune.
Don't you think so? Doesn't it make perfect sense for him, for Romney?
Because I don't think it's going to be Portman, because Romney doesn't want to be visually or mentally associated
with the Bush administration. Absolutely. And there's nobody in the Senate that more aligns themselves with the Bush legacy, right?
It's horrible. When I saw Cheney walking on Capitol Hill 2 weeks ago, I said, WTF, get out of town now. What is he doing on Capitol Hill?
He's probably seeding the ground for his daughter to run for the Senate from Wyoming, which is all but certain to happen in the next 2 years.
I don't care about Liz. What's going to happen is Cheney's putting so much money into this military. They're hoping that these automatic cuts don't go into play.
Right.
Cheney wants Romney to bomb Iran.
A huge chunk of the Republican Party wants him to do that, and I couldn't agree more. It's going to be Thune. It makes perfect sense. He can play the used car salesman to Mitt Romney's new car salesman. So thanks a lot, Suzanne, out there in Seminole, Florida, listening to us. We've now got Mark Solomon with us. He is the national campaign director, for Freedom to Marry, on this remarkable news that for the first time ever, a major party platform will include marriage equality, is approved in the preliminary rounds by a unanimous vote that the Democratic National Committee's convention will vote on a party platform that includes marriage equality. Mark Solomon, thanks for joining me.
Happy to be on.
So this is quite remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's historic. It means a lot when something this fundamental is added to one of the party platforms, and I think it signifies where this movement for the freedom to marry is right now in America.
Well, Freedom to Marry, which people can find online at freedomtomarry.org, and also on Twitter at Freedom to Marry. You can follow Mark at Mark E. Solomon. Kicked off this effort to get the major parties to include a marriage equality plank in their platforms quite some time ago. How did the campaign develop over the past few months?
Well, it was great. We launched it in February, and we expected it to be sort of a slow build, but the day after we launched it, Nancy Pelosi said this is a fantastic idea very publicly, and Senator Jeanne Shaheen jumped on board, and then we had 21 additional senators, and it's really snowballed from there. And of course, the biggest, most momentous thing during that time period was
Joe Biden. I'm just kidding.
Exactly.
The president.
Exactly. It was all Joe Biden. No, the president coming out in support.
Sure.
So
well, and when the president and vice president came out in favor of marriage equality, it seemed like it would make no logical sense for the Democratic Party not to have a marriage equality plank in the platform at that point. Although you never know, right? Politics is a funny sport.
It is. And it's pressure. You know, we put sort of gentle but persistent pressure all along the way to make sure that that the party did the right thing. I mean, when you look at the numbers, 70% of Democrats support gay couples having the right to marry, 60% of independents. So it's really,
well,
politically,
and,
it's...
And on the Republican side, I mean, there's Freedom to Marry works very closely with a lot of Republicans, mostly on the state level, I would say, in the efforts like in New York and New Hampshire and other states that are considering marriage equality on the local level. I kind of see the Republican Party, at least on marriage equality and LGBT equality levels, as where the Democrats were maybe 30 years ago on LGBT issues. They're softening very slowly to the subject. I mean, case in point, look at Texas and Montana. The state party platforms softened a bit when it comes to LGBT issues recently. Do you notice that yourself? I mean, where do you think Republicans are coming down on this? I mean, they've gotten to a point, at least in my mind's eye, that they won't say certain things about gay people anymore that they used to feel free to say. Where do you think they are, and where do you think they're going?
Well, I think what one of the things that's very clear is that there is this demographic issue. We just launched a group called Young Conservatives for the Freedom to Marry.
Right.
And it's you know, made up of young people who really believe that supporting the freedom to marry and supporting conservative beliefs are go hand in hand. The idea that government should leave people alone. So when you look at where younger people who vote Republican are, they're about 50-50 on the question of marriage. So I think things are only heading in one direction. It's obviously it's not as far along as on the Democratic side, but things are.
Well, I mean, even if you look at the conservatives, the Tories in England, where they're having the Olympics right now, David Cameron, the prime minister, has said that there's nothing more conservative than the institution of marriage and that that should be expanded there. So hopefully maybe the Republicans will join forces. Mark, I want to thank you for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to chat with you about the great work of Freedom to Marry.
Happy to do it. Thanks.
All righty.
So
that's Mark Solomon, National Campaign Director for Freedom to Marry. More about them at freedomtomarry.org. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about the Republican war on the Postal Service, and we'll take your calls about who Mitt Romney is going to pick as his running mate. More after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Maybe the reason Republicans want to destroy the post office is because they get so much hate mail because of their lousy job in Washington. More after this. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom today, Thursday and Friday. I am Carl Frisch, Democratic strategist, syndicated columnist. If you're just joining us, we want you to vote in our online poll. To find out who you think Mitt Romney will choose as his running mate, go to facebook.com/Carl Frisch to cast your vote today. Right now we've got former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty leading a pack over Senator Rob Portman, Senator Marco Rubio, Senator John Thune, Governor Nikki Haley, Lieutenant Donald Duck, and Bobby Jindal. Duck is slightly ahead of Bobby Jindal, which says quite a bit. I actually thought for a long time that Bobby Jindal was an animated cartoon. So go cast your vote, facebook.com/Carl Frisch. We'll keep you posted. If you don't like any of the selections that are being offered, you can submit your own selection. We're also taking your calls. Let's talk to, Jim in Los Angeles. Hey, Jim, how's it going?
Hey, Carl Frisch.
Hello.
Nice German name.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, I'm talking about, you know, our present period of time. This is a time of unheard of corporate profits
sure.
for the last 2 years.
Right.
Unheard of corporate profits. This is a time of the highest worker U.S. productivity. That means people are working harder.
Right.
And they're getting paid less.
That's right.
This is a time of stock market highs. The stock market is not even noticing all the people who are homeless out on the street.
Oh, they have no interest in that.
Massive public destitution on Rush Limbaugh. He is mocking the widow and the orphan. The kids, the majority of people on welfare and public assistance are kids. The older, the elderly people, he mocks them.
Absolutely.
He tells them not to vote. Don't vote. Can you imagine how low we have gotten? This is wrecking crew. Wrecking crew.
Well, and the reason that Republicans are going after the Postal Service is for all those reasons. They see one of the largest unionized workforces in the country in the Postal Service. The Postal Service, which, by the way, until Republicans force them to put aside $5.5 billion a year to pay for the health insurance benefits of employees that will not be born until 2057. Until they were forced to do that, the Postal Service was in the black every single year since Richard Nixon made them survive off of their own sales of postage supplies and postage stamps. So how does the Republican do this? They do a 1-2 punch. First, they make them put aside all this money, and then they keep the Postal Service from being able to raise the price of stamps. So what you've got there is the Postal Service having to put aside $5.5 billion Again, what is that money for? To fund the health care for employees that will not be born for 75 years. And they can't even raise the postage stamp price to make up the difference. It's absolutely sick. It's absolutely sick. Let's talk to Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark, what's going on?
Hi. Yeah, I just don't, don't understand why proclaimed more prominently. You know, I mean, I know that the postal carriers, they can't, they're forbidden from talking about things
sure.
like that when they're on their route. But, and then the some of the union officials are, conducting somewhat of a campaign, but the word's not getting out. People aren't hearing about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is sad. I mean, you would think that the media would actually talk about this subject. But I can tell you, you know, I was at Media Matters for America for almost 5 years. I started there as a communications director in 2006, and I left as a senior fellow in 2011, just last year. And I can tell you that when we encourage people to send letters to the editor, when we encourage people to contact their local television stations or the cable news, every single time it has an impact. Even if it doesn't get reporting to happen, it has an impact. So I would encourage you, if you want more information on what the Republicans have done to destroy the post office, go to my website, carlfish.com, and in the search box, just put in postal service. You'll find my column on the subject. Write a letter to your local paper and tell them they need to start covering this issue. Email the folks at Current and MSNBC and CNN and tell them they need to cover this issue. Don't talk to Fox because you don't want them talking about this issue. They'll just lie to people and get even more confusion out there. If you stand up and speak out, others will too. You just have to be confident and have the facts on your side. All right, let's talk to Mark in Seattle. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Carl, how are you today?
I'm good. What's going on?
I am curious with this whole post office nonsense that's going on.
Sure.
Is there anything the president can do by executive order to minimize the effect that this bill is having on the post office? Like maybe not hold them in default when they're defaulting like they are right now.
Well, the problem is because Congress passed a law, the president can't just do an executive order that changes law.
Yeah.
He can do things that change the way that laws are enforced, but I don't think he can do that in this case. What the president can do is talk about it, and I would hope that he would talk about it given an opportunity.
Yeah, of course.
But then again, I mean, look at the presidential debate right now. We talk about stupid things. I mean, nobody's talking about executive power. Nobody's talking about crumbling infrastructure. There are lots of important issues that the presidential candidates aren't being asked about by the media. I'm not surprised this is a subject the media is ignoring. Let's hit Raymond in Palm Beach. Hey, Raymond, who do you think the vice presidential running mate's going to be? Raymond?
Hey, what's up?
Not much. So who's Mitt Romney going to pick for Veep?
Man, I wish you would take Paul Ryan, because that would just be so easy to knock him out over the Ryan budget.
Well, I mean, if we're going to go to that, if we're going to say who we wish you would pick just because it makes it easier to beat him, I mean, I know a woman who is more than willing and available in the great state of Minnesota. She hails from a town just this side of crazy, and her name is Michelle Bachmann. And I realize that ever since she left the presidential race, she's been focusing on that small business that she and her husband run, you know, to help people pray the gay away. And, you know, the cameras left a long time ago, and I understand that Marcus has been on his knees ever since, praying. He's been praying. But, you know, I don't think Mitt Romney is going to choose his running mate simply to make it easier to beat him. I think there aren't very many people that he could pick that will not make it easier to beat him. But I think he's going to try and pick from, you know, the field, the strongest person he possibly can that also appeases the far right evangelicals within his party. Let's go to Gary in Surprise, Arizona. Hey, Gary. Surprised to hear from you.
My nomination is Jan Brewer. she's one of the few people that can outlie Romney.
That's true.
Just think of the help. She could go around to every state and get all these people in line and stick her bony finger in everybody's face.
Yeah, I think
agree with Romney.
I think it would be a lot of trouble brewing on a ticket between the two of them. I'm making way too many puns because I'm absolutely frightened by the idea of Jan Brewer being Mitt Romney's vice presidential candidate. And this is why. I don't expect that the Republicans will automatically discount anybody who happens to be crazy. The fact of the matter is, this is a country that elected George W. Bush 1.5 times. And that means that whoever Mitt Romney picks could be the vice president of the United States. And that means they could be the president of the United States, which is just absolutely horrifying if you think about people like Jan Brewer or Michelle Bachmann or Donald Trump or Donald Duck. But we want to know who you think Mitt Romney is going to pick for his vice presidential running mate. You can vote online at facebook.com/Carl Frisch. That's K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H. We're delighted to know who you think. Let's go to Joyce in Weems, Virginia. Hey, Joyce.
Hello.
Hey there. How are you?
I'm good. I think that if you want to know who's going to be selected for Romney, you're going to have to talk to Cheney. He got himself selected the last time.
That's one heck of a way to do a job interview, if you ask me, by the way.
Yeah.
Can you imagine your boss saying, I want you to interview candidates for this new job that's opening up, and you come back and you say, well, we've exhausted our search, sir. The headhunters have come back, and I've selected myself.
Yeah. Well, if it's not Cheney, then it's going to be Jeb Bush. Because
Jeb
Bush will give legitimacy to to Romney.
Well, I think the problem with Jeb Bush is that his brother, and this is the funny thing, and it's probably pretty sad at family reunions, but W totally ruined it for the Bushes, and I don't think Well, I mean, here's how you know that George W. doesn't care anything about his brother's ambitions. George W. has a book coming out about fixing the economy. This is a man who wrecked the economy coming out with it. And by the way, it's not a coloring book.
He wants to run again.
George W. Bush?
Is that right? Is that what
you're saying? No, I'm saying the only way that George Bush could show that he cares about Mitt Romney winning or about his brother's prospects is to go back to his ranch, put up a 50-foot fence around it, and never come out. Anytime he spends in the spotlight, it reminds people about how disastrous Republicans were for the country, and it hurts Mitt Romney, and it hurts Jeb Bush. So I don't think it's going to be Jebby. But we want to know who you think it's going to be, so go vote at facebook.com/Carl Frisch. Give us a call, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. Let's see if we can hit a really quick one with Bob in St. Joe, Missouri. Hey, Bob. Really quick, who do you think it's going to be?
Marco Rubio.
I don't know about that. We'll talk about Rubio when we come back after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch all afternoon, and I'll be back on Thursday and Friday as well, so stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So is it going to be Marco Rubio that Mitt Romney picks? I don't think Romney Rubio sounds like anything more than a payday lender.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program with guest host Carl Frisch. Connect with him on Twitter at Carl Frisch and visit carlfrisch.com for more information.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom all afternoon. Today, tomorrow, and Friday, I am Carl Frisch, syndicated columnist, Democratic strategist. We're talking to you. We want to know who you think Mitt Romney will pick to be his vice presidential running mate. It's going to happen any day, folks. He's got to do something to get the media to stop talking about all these gaffes he's committed overseas, in London, in Poland, in Israel, not to mention his taxes and those other financial issues that he's got going on. And nothing else will work other than announcing his running mate. So give us a call toll-free, 866-987-8466. And go vote in the poll online and tell us who you think he's going to pick. Facebook.com/Carl Frisch, K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H. Kevin in Seattle. Hey, Kevin, who's it going to be?
Hey there, Carl. Big fan of yours and Tom's.
Thank you.
For a long time. I think that you and our other beloved gatekeepers on the left are underestimating how underhanded these people are. I see a scenario where they are being very, very brilliant. They are allowing Romney to be a punching bag for all these months, and right before the convention, they are going to suddenly realize that he can't be their nominee for whatever reason. They'll leak his tax returns if they have to. Jeb Bush is going to ride in on a white horse. You're going to be an unbelievably
a white horse or the Romney's dancing horse?
Yes, yeah, a dressage horse. He'll prance in, forgive me. And then they'll only have 2 months to tamp down on the media stuff, and then they're going to use their voter suppression, and they're going to bribe and blackmail and use these phony voting machines.
Yeah.
They steal elections. They're planning to steal this election, and they don't,
I don't think
they can do it with Romney.
Kevin, that's all very interesting, but that's not going to happen. I mean, the latter part might, but they're not going to get rid of Romney. So who do you think Romney's going to pick?
And Paul, I think he's going to pull an
Andrew. Oh, come on!
And grab all the Romulans. He's going to, because Paul still has some sneaky stuff coming up at that convention.
Yeah, you know, sneaky stuff is that nobody's going to pay attention to Ron Paul at that convention.
You know, he's got a huge festival going on right beforehand. He's got more delegates than anybody's admitting to.
It's going
to
be like a Renaissance fair. I mean, nobody's going to care about Ron Paul. I mean, this is, first of all, these things are so carefully scripted. I think it was Ron Paul's own communications director who said, why do people always portray our supporters as crazy? It's because of stuff like this. I mean, he's not going to...
Warlord media. If you understand that the media is controlled by people who make money off war, then they will do anything to discredit
Well,
Ron
hang on
Paul
a second. Okay, Ron Paul's against the war. I think that's kudos to him. But he's also a crazy bigot. So,
absolutely. And his nut job libertarian philosophy. But he's the only one talking about...
It's not just his nut job. It's not just his nut job libertarian philosophy. He's a racist and a homophobe and an anti-Semite. So, I think it's good that the media doesn't give him much attention. And by the way, he hasn't earned it. The best he's been able to do is to wrangle some delegates at state conventions. That's not the way to a nomination. It's very, you know, he's only gotten a little bit further along than he was during the primary process, and that's not enough to make much of an impact at a convention. So I can't picture.
They've turned around and realized that he won Iowa.
So what? You can't retroactively get the attention that Rick Santorum got. And you know what? It's too bad. I mean, we thought Romney won, then it was Santorum, and now it's Ron Paul. It doesn't matter anymore. I mean,
all it does,
Kevin, is set up the Ron Paul people to feel like, okay, we didn't get it this time, but 2016 is going to be our year. And 4 years after that, 2020 is going to be our year. And at some point, the LaRouche people are going to look at the Ron Paul people and they're going to say, why don't we put our crazy band of traveling Wilburys together and have a super crazy ticket? It's just, it's insane. Kevin, thanks for calling.
The power of an anti-war message.
Well, you know, that'll never happen in the Republican Party. I commend Ron Paul for that, and I give him guff for being a lunatic fringe character who feeds off of racism. So have a good one, Kevin. Let's talk to George in Aurora. Hey, George.
Good afternoon. I'm calling about something a little bit different.
Sure.
And that is the claim that the Republicans are making that 72% of the stimulus money was used overseas.
That's not true.
Never got spent in this country. And I just wondered how you, first of all, how they make the claim, and secondly, how you can...
George, I'm gonna enlighten you really quickly. Is that okay? I'm gonna teach you something that's fundamental to understanding how Republicans can make that claim. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. They look in the camera. They smile. Mm-hmm. They straighten their tie. They open their mouth, and they lie. And since they have no moral ground to stand on, and they don't care about ethics, they don't even bat an eye. So when you see a Republican talk, you know how you want to know how you can tell a Republican's lying, George?
Because their lips are moving.
Precisely. George, thanks for calling.
Okay.
Have a good one. Let's talk to Craig in Sarasota. Hey, Craig.
Hey there, Carl. How you doing?
I'm good. So who's Mitt going to pick?
It's got to be Marco Rubio.
You know, just because you guys don't want Marco Rubio to be your senator doesn't mean that we have to have him as vice president.
He's got nothing else in Florida. The governor is so terrible. He's trying to stay away from Rick Scott as far as he can. That's all he's got left. But I look for a long shot.
Well, it's not the first time somebody's tried to stay away from Rick Scott. It used to be anybody that was covered by his insurance programs tried to stay away from him.
Oh, there you go. But look for a long shot in Bernie Madoff.
I don't think it's going to be Rubio simply because yeah, there's been two books written about him of late. I don't think that's a really serious vetting. And B, the Republicans risked way too much on somebody who had only been on the national stage for very briefly. So I think it's going to have to be somebody who's much more established and much more safe. They can't risk anything in this election. So I think you're going to have to keep him as your senator until we can get rid of him in 4 years. Sorry about that. Excuse me, I got a little bit of a cold today. So we're taking your calls about this and other subjects. We've got some other great guests coming up today. Give us a call toll-free. Let us know who you think is going to be Mitt Romney's running mate. I'm enjoying all of these submissions, whether it's Donald Duck or Donald Trump. 866-987-TOM-8466. That's 987-8466. Carl Frisch filling in for Tom today, tomorrow, and Friday. And we'll be back after this.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom today, I am Carl Frisch, Democratic strategist, syndicated columnist, co-founder of Bullfight Strategies, the Washington-based strategic communications firm. You can find more at bullfightstrategies.com. More about me at carlfrisch.com. If you're just joining us, we are dying to know who you think Mitt Romney's vice presidential running mate is going to be. So go vote online at facebook.com/Carl Frisch. That's facebook.com/KARLFRISCH. We'd love to know who you think it's going to be. But joining me now, we're going to take a little departure from what we've been talking about. Joining me now to talk about his new book and the controversy surrounding Chick-fil-A is my friend Jeremy Hooper, who is the blogger and the founder and editor of goodasyou.com and the author of the new book, If It's a Choice, My Zygote Chose Balls. Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Carl. Great to be here.
So before we get to your book, I want to talk a little bit about this whole Chick-fil-A issue. Some people that follow me online will know that last week I was banned from Facebook for the better part of an afternoon for posting an image of the Chick-fil-A cows holding up signs that had basically the Westboro Baptist Church God hates signs in their hand, in their hooves. And my account was restored after Facebook found out that they'd done it. But it's been quite the controversial subject. Let me play this clip for you of Dan Cathy. He's the founder of Chick-fil-A. Let's hit clip 5.
In Romans chapter 1, you'll see that because we have not acknowledged God and because we have not thanked God, that we've been left victim to the foolishness of our own thoughts. And as a result, we are suffering the consequences of a society and culture who has not acknowledged God or not thanked God, and he's left us to a deprived mind.
A deprived mind. I think he's talking about you and me there.
Yeah, I'm thinking so.
So,
although usually I hear it as depraved mind, so I think he might have misspoken a little bit.
So how did all this come to be? I mean, I've known that Chick-fil-A is anti-gay for years, but it seems that the controversy kind of died down over the course of several months, and then this stuff popped up all of a sudden. How did this happen?
Well, I think that's a great place to start because I think that's another element that's getting lost. You know, this all started back in 2011 when we uncovered their donations, and also the fact that their Windshape Retreat Center expressly bans same-sex couples. You know, for a while, this got a lot of attention. People love the Chick-fil-A story, I think because it's kind of an easy, on-the-ground thing that everyone sort of knows about, especially in the South, so that everyone has an opinion about it. But what was interesting to me is that this was completely gone for the most part. No one was doing anything on Chick-fil-A. I certainly wasn't. So Dan Cathy sort of doubled down. And when I saw in the Baptist press that he was saying guilty as charged to all of his critics, that's when I started thinking, really? Like, that's how he's addressing this controversy? He kind of thinks he's kind of won it. So that's when I started digging to see what else he's been saying lately. And that's when I uncovered these two audio clips. You just played one of them and there's one other.
I've got the other one. Let's hit that one too, just so people can hear him. Clip 6.
I think we're inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at him and say, you know, we know better than you as to what constitutes a marriage. And I pray God's mercy on our generation that has such a prideful, arrogant attitude to think that we would have the audacity to try to redefine what marriage is all about.
The audacity of people like you, Jeremy Hooper.
Exactly. I'm a married man, so I guess that's me. And I would also add to that, the second one you played was an audio clip, so I don't know what he was wearing. But in the first one, he was in a church, so his entire speech was about Chick-fil-A. He was actually wearing a Chick-fil-A button, standing next to a stuffed cow. So it's not like this was disconnected from Chick-fil-A.
Well, and that's what you hear from right-wingers. I mean, they say two things. They still serve gay people.
Right.
And the second thing they say is it's his freedom of speech, as if your freedom of speech is not to protest.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I've said this a couple of times. This started out as one of the purest stories. You know, it was just, he said this, and when I posted it initially, I had almost no editorializing. I basically said, this is the clip, this is what happened, what responded. And what happened? The only time Dan Cathy's acknowledged us at all, he went on a Fox affiliate in San Antonio, and what do you think he said? He said, those bloggers are cutting up my words and twisting my words, because that's always what they say.
Right.
The verbatim audio is always edited somehow.
And you know what they never ask in response? Well, then put it in context. You said the following. What was the context? Because there is no context to guilty as charged, I'm a homophobe, basically.
Well, that's the frustration with our issues. You know, on any other issue, that's what would have happened. He would have had to respond to what he said or did, and it would have been controversial to ask him to do so because that's kind of how debate works.
Right.
But with our issues, they're allowed to get around it with saying things like traditional marriage and free speech and religious freedom. And
let's dispel that this is just about what he said. I mean, mm-hmm. You mentioned Windshape, which is the charitable arm of Chick-fil-A and the Cathy family. And in 2007, as you noted, they were, you know, revealed to have given large sums of money to Christian groups and hate groups as defined by the Southern Poverty Law Center, right?
Yeah, Exodus International, an ex-gay group, yeah, and that was one. Family Research Council, which, as you know, is one of the most offensive of any, and also the most dangerous because they still get routinely booked by mainstream media. So there's that, and then there's also, I mentioned the ban on same-sex couples. Their retreat center is essentially geared to strengthening people's marriage. So I had a reader who wrote them and said, hey, you know, I'm legally married to my spouse, and we'd like to visit your retreat center. And they flat out said in an email, no, we don't allow same-sex couples. And then there's also a third component that they have something called the Marriage Commission. And every year, and I think they've stopped this, but every year they had a kind of a secretive little summit in December. And each year they would invite Maggie Gallagher and Focus on the Family's president, Jim Daly, and just any number of just the who's who of the anti-LGBT right to strategize against us on marriage.
They weren't just making chicken sandwiches there?
No, they were. And Bubba Cathy, who is actually Dan's brother, he was actually one of the speakers. I have him on video, you know, just addressing the summit. And so it's not like they're disconnected. It's all one big thing. You know, they try to minimize this because it is easy to minimize.
Well, they all try to minimize. I mean, this is not unique to the anti-gay right.
Right.
NAM does the same thing. They distance themselves from the truly crazy, even though they work very closely with them.
Well, and also interesting is that NAM has written, at last count, NAM has written.
NAM, of course, is the National Organization of Marriage.
Correct. NAM has written, I believe, 45 of my last count of posts that they've written specifically on Chick-fil-A, and not once have they mentioned what Dan Cathy actually said. Not one time have they said it. I mean, that to me is just so telling, and that's why we need the media to hold them accountable.
Absolutely. I've never had more vitriolic tweets directed at me on Twitter. You can follow me at Carl Frisch. You can also follow Jeremy at Good As You on Twitter than I have over the Chick-fil-A issue from people that absolutely don't grasp what's happening here. Like I said, they all say, don't deny him his freedom of speech, and they'll still serve you food.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly. And my most frustrating thing today, yes, I've seen some really nasty tweets, but the ones that have been frustrating me more are the ones from people who will say something like, I'm for same-sex marriage, but I'm also for free speech, so I'm going to Chick-fil-A. And I just want to pull my hair out. It's like we need a national class on what freedom of speech really means, because it's the most misunderstood concept.
Right, as if you're not exercising your freedom of speech by protesting. And by the way, here's the interesting thing for me. A lot of these libertarian conservatives, and Jeremy, if you can stick around after this break, I'd appreciate we can talk a little bit more about this and about your book. A lot of these conservatives, have a libertarian bent to them, and they will say things like they didn't support the 64 Civil Rights Act because the free market could have, gotten rid of these people quicker. Well, this is the free market. So all these people that proclaim that garbage should be on our side, saying let's let the free market take care of this and get rid of bigotry from these restaurants.
100%. And also don't forget that the National Organization for Marriage is currently boycotting two corporations, Starbucks and General Mills.
Well, you can't keep them consistent, Jeremy. Let's stick around. We'll talk more with Jeremy Hooper about his new book and more about Chick-fil-A after this break.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What's that foul taste in your mouth? It's Chick-fil-A! Welcome back. That's Cher, and this is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch all afternoon, tomorrow, and Friday as well. If you're just joining us, we are talking to Jeremy Hooper. He is the founder and editor of goodasyou.com. He's also the author of the new book, If It's a Choice, My Zygote Chose Balls. Jeremy, thanks for sticking around.
Thanks, Carl.
So we were talking about a little bit about Chick-fil-A and everything that's going on out there in this boycott. But I also wanted to talk a bit about your book, If It's a Choice, My Zygote Chose Balls, which people can purchase online by going to your website, goodasyou.org. Why don't you talk to us a bit about why you wrote the book?
Well, I have a very compelling story, I felt, because I came from a very conservative Southern background, a very non-accepting background, and I kind of journeyed to a great place of acceptance. I married into the B-flag poster family. My in-laws they really should be in national ads because they were, when my husband said that he was gay, it was very much the, oh, thank God, we thought you were going to say you have cancer. I mean, it wasn't, they didn't have an eye. But they did go to B-flag, actually, the following Monday, just to make sure that they were informed, and just the perfect journey that I took personally, also my journey of my own self-acceptance. And it's just kind of I see both sides and how easy and obtainable this piece could be if everyone would sort of allow themselves to take necessarily the same journey I did, but take that sort of those steps towards acceptance. And so I wanted to take that story and marry it with our political fight and try to hit on some key points, but doing it in kind of a new, refreshing way.
Well, it's also very funny. I don't think you give yourself enough credit. It's a pretty funny read, too.
That's the thing. I'm someone who always learns through unorthodox means. I don't respond as well to like a textbook treatment, so I didn't want to write that. I wanted to write a more of a memoir structure.
It's interesting. I mean, a lot of gay people have the same path that you have to self-acceptance. I mean, in my case, my father was a cop for 35 years, and my mom was a waitress, and extremely conservative family in Los Angeles. Similar experience. To get back on the Chick-fil-A front, I mean, just because I think there's some symmetry here, what does it say about the experience of LGBT people in this country when every day they're reminded about how they're discriminated against in just normal run-of-the-mill things? I mean, the average heterosexual person going into Chick-fil-A or McDonald's or whatever is never confronted with the idea that that company is spending money against their civil rights.
It's true, and I think, that's always the thing with these sorts of stories like Chick-fil-A, or earlier this year with all those, there's a series of, I know you know about them, the pastors whose audio we kept coming up with, just saying these heinous things. And I was, the one who brought a lot of those to light. And every time I would have this duality working within me, I would say, I have no choice but to promote this and to get that out there to show the public what's being said. But at the same time, it does make me scared.
You're talking about the pastors who said that they should put gay people behind a big fence and throw food at them and beat their children into submission. And
yeah, during this spring, there was like four or five back-to-back, and they all involved some sort of call for execution.
Right.
And I'm thinking, you know, these people don't exist in a bubble. They have communities, and there are people hearing this the same way, like you said today, the people who see these lines at Chick-fil-A and see people who are making these such pointed stands. And tonight on the news, we'll see people making very pointed comments. I know that the groups like Family Research Council don't take enough responsibility for it, but I don't think even the average Joe realizes how that affects the mind and how that can
sure.
really.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's gay people in those pews at church. You know, it's striking. I mean, even straight allies, for the most part, don't know quite the extent to which LGBT people are discriminated against in this country. I routinely run into, and I work in politics, and I routinely run into straight friends who have no idea that in 30 states I could be fired just for being gay. Because they think, well, society's moved so far along. Well, the laws haven't. The laws really haven't.
I always say our fight is very strange in that in some ways it is the most interesting thing in the world to people. You know, we love to talk about what celebrity is gay and marriage is always in the news. But at the same time, even really informed people are really misinformed on our issues.
Right.
I have people still thinking that we can get married in Hawaii. I mean, that's such a common one. Your Manhattan liberals on the Upper West Side who will say that, who graduated from Columbia. It's a very strange thing. And I do think there's also this casual, you know, just heterosexism that comes into play of people just, you know, they think they get it, but they don't fully get it.
Right.
Or the story like Chick-fil-A, it seems so just silly, or sometimes it seems what they would consider, you know, militant or those words that it's like, no, these are our lives and this is important.
Right. I mean, and it's, well, they keep on saying, you know, well, you can still eat the sandwiches. Why would I want to eat a sandwich or have any of my friends, colleagues, family members, which is really what this is about, is letting them know what happens when you go to eat a sandwich there. Why would I want to do that when I know that a percentage of the profits off of that sandwich are going to fight against my simple human dignity and civil rights?
Yeah, I kind of love the insensitivity in those statements. I've heard Chick-fil-A corporate offices repeat them several times. Yeah, we'll still take your money. That's essentially what they're
right. Essentially, what they're saying is like, hang on a second, this is not quite a lunch counter in the 1960s. is basically what they're saying. I mean, we may be spending money to institute policies that make a world like it's a lunch counter in the 1960s, but you can still eat here to help us put those policies into place.
Right.
Jeremy Hooper, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. Thanks a lot for joining us.
He is
the editor and publisher of goodasyou.org, and you can buy his book there as well. Go pick up a copy of it. If it's a choice, my zygote chose balls, goodasyou.org. Jeremy, thanks for joining me. This is the Tom Hartman Program, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, we're taking your calls. Toll free 866-987-8466.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program with guest host Carl Frisch. Connect with him on Twitter at Carl Frisch and visit carlfrisch.com for more information.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Show program. Filling in for Tom, I am Carl Frisch all afternoon, today, tomorrow, and Friday. We're taking your calls. Let's hit Renee in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Renee.
Hi, Carl. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am okay, dear. I'm a little bit worked up because I'm so angry at the fact that Chick-fil-A is targeting same-sex couples. Why not bring up, you know, the quote-unquote sin, heterosexual sin, pornography, adultery, prostitution?
Well, it's very simple. Because almost exclusively the right-wing focuses on gay people because it's easy to demonize a class of people. I don't believe that all homophobes are closet cases. But I do believe that most men in this country use pornography, have cheated on their wives,
yes,
have thought about cheating on their wives. You know, some have open marriages, all kinds of things. So if they actually went after those things, it would cost, it would cause introspection by all of their customers, and a lot of uncomfortable conversations and self-reflection. So the easiest thing to do is to pick a class of people that they're confident is a minority enough that they can pick on them. And that's why they do it. It's the same reason that these right-wingers like the Family Research Council and the AFA and everybody else focus almost entirely on abortion and gay people instead of on poverty and things where they could actually help millions of people.
It just it angers me beyond belief, dear, because you know what? The God and the Jesus Christ that I serve are not haters and they're not bigots, and how dare they use them to hide behind.
I've heard it said before. I think it was Gandhi who said, "I'm a fan of your Christ. I'm just afraid of your Christians." So
yes. I'm a fan. You know, it's a friend of mine emailed me something that says, "I have nothing against God. It's his fans that I can't stand."
But my good friend John Fugelsang often says he thinks about Jesus the way he thinks about Elvis. He's a fan of their work. It's his fans that creep him out from time to time. Renee, thanks for giving us a call today.
Thank you.
And we're also wondering who you think Mitt Romney is going to pick as his running mate. We've had some interesting submissions. You can make your voice heard at facebook.com/Carl Frisch. There's a poll up there that you can vote or put your own submissions in there. There have been quite a few interesting submissions, I must say. My personal favorite, and here's the totals that we have going thus far. The totals with lots of different candidates in the mix. I'll just give you the top five or six. Coming in at first is Tim Pawlenty, still. Second is Rob Portman from Ohio. Third is Marco Rubio. Fourth is John Thune, who you know I think is going to be the running mate. And fifth is Clark Griswold, the father played by Chevy Chase from the Vacation movies, you know, European Vacation and Vacation, and of course Christmas Vacation, a classic to be sure. I actually thought that Mitt Romney reminded me quite a bit of Clark Griswold on his European trip recently. The only thing he didn't do is fall down. You know, so it's quite ridiculous. So go vote, facebook.com/Carl Frisch. And we're also taking your calls on the subject. Will in Chicago, you think it's going to be Condi. Explain yourself, sir.
Well, I think it'll be Condi because of the fact that it'll give him a little equilibrium with the race, with the black vote. And secondly, it will kind of pique the women's vote as far as picking her.
Well, here's the thing. They thought by picking Sarah Palin they could peel off Hillary people because, you know, women, they've got estrogen in common. They will vote for another woman. It doesn't work that way. These groups are not monolithic. Look at Michael Steele. He couldn't get the black vote for himself in Maryland when he ran for the Senate. It's not because of the color of his skin. It's because of his policies. And I'll tell you the real reason why the Republicans would never put Condi on the ticket. It's because it would strike, it would rip the party clear in half. She's pro-choice. That will never stand in the Republican Party as it currently stands today. Most importantly, remember, Mitt Romney is not loved by the abortion activists within his ranks, the people that build up the basis of his party. They don't trust him necessarily. So if he were to choose a pro-choice running mate, there would be an open revolt within the party. So that's why I don't think Condi's the one. I also don't think she would ever take it. I mean, she could have done it anytime she wanted as an independent or something else. She will never be a Republican nominee for president or vice president. Thanks for giving us a call, Will. Why don't we talk to Wayne in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Wayne. Wayne, are you there?
Hi, Carl.
Hey, so who do you think it's going to be?
Oh, my guess is that Romney, you know, you said that he has to have somebody that won't take the spotlight off him.
Sure.
I disagree. Right now he needs to have the spotlight taken off of him. So I'm going to guess Ted Nugent. I think that'll lock up the Tea Party for him.
It would actually probably lead to the Tea Party being locked up, I think. Ted Nugent would be an interesting selection. I mean, let's see what you've got, what demographics he could hit. He could get 50-year-old men who think they're rock stars and still have ponytails and goatees. He could get NRA members who have advocated the assassination of U.S. senators and presidents of the United States.
Secessionists, too.
Secessionists. Yeah, I mean, there's so many different hits you could get. I mean, all those Rick Perry fans would really take a liking to him. Unfortunately, I don't think he's going to pick somebody like Ted Nugent or Michelle Bachmann. I like where your heart is in it. Thanks a lot for calling, Wayne. Let's go to Let's go to Paul in Detroit. Hey, Paul.
Yeah, how you doing, Carl? It's great.
Good.
To talk
so you're
to
in you. You're in Motor City there, and it just so happens that Mitt Romney's got a new commercial where he is trying to claim that Barack Obama killed jobs by saving the auto industry. How ridiculous is that?
Right, yeah, well, Romney was for all the auto workers losing their pensions, which would have happened in bankruptcy.
Exactly. You know, that's just standard protocol for Mitt Romney when he's going in and gutting an industry.
Yeah, exactly. I think Romney's going to pick Frankenstein as his running mate because they're both exactly alike. And I got a list of similarities here.
Let's hear them.
Well, they look similar. They both used to be human. Or at least Frankenstein did, anyway. They're both bullies. Remember, Romney's bullied so many people throughout school that he can't even remember a specific incident. You're holding a guy down and cutting his hair off.
Right, it was just hijinks.
Yeah, and let's see, Frankenstein was from the 1800s. Romney wants to take the country back to the 1800s.
True.
No laws against pollution, no protection for food, no firemen.
Right.
No. Frankenstein thinks monsters are people. Romney thinks corporations are people. That's the same thing. You know, monsters are brain-dead sociopaths. Well, so that's what corporations are, right?
Sure.
Frankenstein likes to attack hardworking, innocent people. Romney attacks hardworking, innocent people. He buys their factories, closes them down, ships their jobs overseas, cuts their pay, steals their pensions, you know? I got one more.
All right.
Frankenstein had a hideout on the outskirts of town, remember?
That's
right. Romney's got hideouts all over the world for his millions of dollars, Swiss bank accounts.
Well, you know, I've got one that you might not have considered. My understanding is that Frankenstein was built in part with the parts from car garages that were taken from, garage elevators, car elevators that were taken from the homes around town. And Mitt Romney recently, you know, tried to build a car elevator in his house.
That's
so
true. In one of his mansions, right? I wish somebody would ask him how many mansions he has. Nobody's done that.
Well, he's downsized to three. This is why it's important to talk about Mitt Romney's taxes in terms of more than the last couple of years, and why we need to go back before he considered running for president, before he was governor. He's been preparing for this.
Exactly.
Do not tell me that Mitt Romney drives an F-150 and his wife has a couple Cadillacs.
Yeah.
They've had fancy cars. I guarantee you they have. Do not tell me he only has three or four houses. Guarantee you he has more has had more. I mean, the fact of the matter is this is an extremely wealthy guy. And I don't begrudge somebody of wealth being president of the United States. It's his complete and utter inability to understand how he got there and what he did once he got there. And he did more to hurt people in this country than a lot of people have, and that's one of the reasons why he shouldn't be president, and it's just one reason. Thanks for giving us a call. You can give us a call toll-free, and we want to know what you think, 866-987-TOM, and we're taking your calls. Let's hit Sonny in Swainsboro, North Carolina. Hey, Sonny.
Yeah.
Who do you think it's going to be, Sonny?
I wonder why Colin Powell hasn't been mentioned.
For Romney?
Yeah.
Because he endorsed Obama. He supports the president. That's why he's not being considered. Usually people who endorse the other candidate don't end up on the ticket. I say usually because, John McCain considered, nominating Joe Lieberman. So, in 2008. So it's just a usual thing. But, thanks for your call, Sonny. Let's see here. Why don't we go to Gary in Spiro, Oklahoma. Hey, Gary.
Hello. Yes, greetings from the reddest state in the union.
Hey, how are you?
I'm very good. I want to talk to you about Mitt Romney's little European scam here.
All right, we've got a little bit of time left. What do you think of it?
I don't think the guy can stick his foot any farther down his mouth than he did.
It's true. I don't know what you think, but my personal favorite part of the entire trip through England was when he was talking to Brian Williams from NBC News, and Brian Williams asked him about his dancing horse, and he acted like, I didn't even know we had a horse that dances. That's really more of Anne's thing than mine. I don't know what time it is. I don't know how it's scored. It's a bunch of baloney. Google it. Listen to the tapes of him bragging about his horses to Sean Hannity. It's hysterical. Anyways, coming up next, we've got more of your calls and more great talk. This is the Tom Hartman Program filling in. I'm Carl Frisch, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, a news update from Talk Radio News Service. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom. It is 50 after. I am Carl Frisch, Democratic strategist, syndicated columnist. We're taking your calls. We're talking about who Mitt Romney might pick to be his running mate. Let's go to Jack in Edminster, New Jersey. Hey, Jack.
Okay. I think they ought to nominate Ted Stevens, former senator from Alaska.
Uh-huh.
First of all, he's proved himself technologically sophisticated. He understood about the Internet tubes.
Sir, you know he's dead, right?
Well, that's the best part of it, that's coming. Next, they can put pictures up of old white guys. That ought to motivate the base.
Well, there's no shortage of old white guys in the Republican Party, sir.
In this particular case, however, he won't say anything to embarrass the Republican Party like the Mitster does.
Well, I appreciate your call, Jack. Thanks a lot. Joining us now, we've got Ellen Ratner from Talk Radio News Service, who is calling us. She is so dedicated. She's calling us from the train. Hello, Ellen. How are you?
Good. Well, actually, I should have stayed in town and done you live, but you know, there was New York calling, and a few days off. So what was I going to say?
Get out. Well, you work hard. You certainly deserve it. So what's going on out there?
Well, it's interesting. Speaking of working hard, Speaker John Boehner is being very kind and offering so many things that he's offering that the House will be called at the House back in session if by any chance they're going to essentially vote to quote unquote prevent tax hikes, i.e. reestablish the Bush tax cut.
Right.
That he will call the House back in session in order to do this. Is the Senate going to pass it? I highly.
And by the way, that's a tax increase. They're supporting this tax increase on 12 million people, middle class and lower income people, including millions of, single parents.
And what they're figuring, the three think tanks that released this report today, basically say it's going to be $2,000 per family. That it's going to go up $2,000.
Meanwhile, the incomes of these people has been relatively stagnant over the last 25 years. It's the super wealthy who they're preserving these tax cuts for that have been doing gangbusters when it comes to making more money.
That's exactly right. And so, in fact, Nancy Pelosi and some other people held a press conference on this today to talk about it. And really, I mean, what's interesting though is that Obama really hit hard on that when he was in
right.
My home state, the great state of Ohio, as I like to call it. May have the death penalty, but it's still the great state of Ohio. And so Obama today was like wild on this issue on the campaign stuff. He said the centerpiece of my opponent's entire economic plan is a new $5 trillion tax cut. A lot of this tax cut would go to the wealthiest 1%. Folks making more than $3 million a year, the top 10th 1%, would get a cut worth almost $250,000, $250,000. He said, then it gets worse. Under my opponent's plan, guess who gets the bill for these $250,000 tax cuts? You do, and you don't have to take my word for it. You know, it was nice to sort of see that part of Obama back there again.
Well, it's got to be the fiery, take no prisoners, fight hard president on that stump, because that's what's going to get the base energized. Do you think that the policy that Romney's kind of outlined is likely to help him, gin up support on the base?
It's hard to tell. I mean, as you know, that famous book, What's the Matter with Kansas, people
sure.
can to sometimes vote against their own interests because somebody's convinced them that it is against their interests. It's just
you may only make minimum wage right now and have trouble putting food on the table, or as George Bush said, put food on your family, but one day you're going to have $1 billion.
Right, and as you know, it's interesting, Governor Romney is going out to meet with the Republican governors. Many of them were out at the Aspen Institute, actually, as, well, just a few minutes ago, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and Harvard economist, has actually been talking about the tax plan. So, for once, you know, you have to sort of clap your hands and say that finally the Democrats have gotten it together and they're really planning this kind of thing, and they're planning very, very, to be very hard hit.
Well, it's refreshing, to say the least, to see the party firing on all cylinders. Do you think this is a step towards, we've been talking all afternoon about Romney announcing his running mate at some point soon, if anything, to get the coverage off of his taxes, which I know the Obama campaign hit hard on today, and his disastrous trip abroad. Any indication beyond the Romney aide tweeting out the names of a bunch of people who are apparently on the short list of when that's going to happen?
No, I mean, you know, we have an office pool on it if you'd like to join, $50 gift certificate on it. We just have no idea. Obviously, it's going to, year's now August 1st. The convention starts August 27th. So within the next 26 days. But my guess is he's going to do it within a week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was, they did announce that they're going to do a 2-week bus trip before the convention. That seemed like the ripe opportunity just before that to do it.
Right. So I would say by next Friday or Saturday, a week from now, by the 9th or 10th of August, we're going to have a pretty good idea.
Yeah, giving them a week to roll it out in the press and to suffer any hard hits that they might
and
get.
And then go on a bus
and then
tour.
Go on a tour. Right.
Right.
Well, it's certainly fascinating. Alan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, to quote Wolf Blitzer, we'll leave it there. I certainly appreciate you calling in from
Thank
the train
you so much.
And all your hard work. Thanks a lot.
You got it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. In the next hour of the show, we've got some great stuff coming up. Tina Dupuy, my good friend, the syndicated columnist, and the now New Yorker, who is the editor-in-chief of Soapblocks.net, is going to join us to talk about her column about why it does not make for a good party platform to just be everything that Obama is not. It's a really great read. You can find it at TinaDupuy.com. We'll be chatting with her. We'll also be taking your calls, and we'll also be talking to John Nichols about the legacy of Gore Vidal, who, as we learned last night, has passed away. All that and more. Stick around. Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom all afternoon. I'm Carl Frisch. We'll be back after this break.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom all afternoon today, tomorrow, and Friday. I am Carl Frisch, Democratic strategist, syndicated columnist, and partner at Bullfight Strategies. You can find online bullfightstrategies.com. More about me at carlfrisch.com. And if you're just joining us, we want to know who you think Mitt Romney is going to pick as his vice presidential running mate. So go vote in our online poll at facebook.com/Carl Frisch. That's K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H. We're also taking your calls 866-987-TOM, 866-987-8466. Let's take Jeff in Barrington, Illinois, really quick before we get to our next guest. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Carl. How are you?
I'm good. How's it going?
Good. You know, I was on my way home from work, and I turned on Tom Hartman, and I realized he wasn't speaking. I said, oh, who is this guy talking? So I started listening, and I noticed that you had said that you were gay.
Sure.
And I was just thinking about this because we just had a conversation at work about this.
Right.
Now, first off, I'm a straight guy.
Thank you for clarifying. Okay.
Okay. So I have no opinion one way or the other. I don't care what people do.
Right.
It doesn't bother me one bit. But I what bothers me is about the whole thing is like when we're at work, I work for a company, they probably have 3,000 people there.
Sure.
And from time to time, they hire gay people.
Right.
And there's always an announcement made. You know, he's gay. Did you know he's gay?
When you say announcement, what do you mean?
Well, everybody has to tell everybody that this person's gay.
Right.
So, and I mean, you know, when I was hired with the company, nobody went around and said I was heterosexual. And did you know this guy has a wife?
Well, you don't have to, because it's the presumption.
Okay. But I mean, secondly, when we go to a meeting and there's going to be a gay people attending that meeting, uh-huh. they say, you know, be careful not to say this.
Who is they?
Administrative assistants, people that give us, you know, stuff that we need to go to the meeting.
Let me just try and get some clarity here. So basically, like, if you're going to a business meeting, maybe you're pitching a client or something, somebody's going to tell you, this person that we're meeting with is gay, so be careful not to say this, that, or the other.
Right, okay. Exactly.
All right.
So, you know, that leads
would it be any would it be any different if it was, say, like a Native American and somebody said something about the culture of Native Americans, things that you would want to avoid when pitching a Native American?
Well, first of all, I just don't talk like a fool, so I wouldn't be making any
Well, that's a good place to start, I think.
I don't go in there and make any off remarks. It's pretty safe to say when you're at work, just stick to business and don't be making any derogatory remarks about anybody.
Well, I think that's true broadly. I think, you know, being respectful and being, you know, humble at work, I think is important. To the broader point about people being open about being gay at work, I'll tell you why you may hear about it. In workplace settings, people talk about their personal lives. You know, people say, "What are you doing this weekend?" You know, and for the better part of this country's history, the gay employee would reply in very scripted, you know, secretive ways. You know, I am going to hang out with my special friend or whatever it happens to be. But by and large, I mean, what you'll hear from people that are opposed to marriage equality is, why do gay people have to announce that I don't have any problems with them? Well, it's not about announcing it. It's just about sharing that aspect of our lives with people. So in a workplace, people are collegial. They talk about their personal lives. And the presumption is always the wife or the husband, because there's, you know, somebody's desk might have a photo of the spouse on the desk. So when we talk about our personal lives, being gay is just as integral to the part in my life that's personal as a wife and kids or a kid's soccer game on the weekend is to a straight person with kids. So I think that's why it comes up. I think you're right not to say anything offensive to folks, but that's why it comes up. And you know what? You live in a state where gay people can't be fired for being gay. In 30 states in this country, gay people can be fired simply because who they love. So I think, you know, I think we'd all be well to know that and realize it. And I do appreciate your call, Jeff. Let's get to our guest, my good friend, Tina Dupuy. She is the editor-in-chief of soapblocks.net. She's also a syndicated columnist and a transplant New Yorker who I met in Los Angeles. Hey, Tina, how are you?
Hey, Carl, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
Well, I wanted to have you on because I love your column this week. People can find it at tinadupuy.com. Let me just read the opening of it for people at home, because I think it sets the stage for a pretty great piece of work on your part. If Barack Obama had been the president who said, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself," Republicans would call it capitulation. Quote, "Obama surrenders to America's enemies," quote. Commenters on Fox News would opine it's actually an Islamic saying he picked up in a madrasa in Indonesia. The Prophet Muhammad talked about fear. It speaks to his Muslim learnings. Fox and Friends would lead the next morning with the question, "Did Obama include the part of the Quran in his speech last night?" Your broader point is that you can't really build much of a party platform on just being the opposite of Obama, right?
Right. It's really difficult. You know, I mean, this is a president who said that Sonia Sotomayor had empathy, and suddenly it's a party that was against empathy. And empathy, as you know, is what every sociopath doesn't have. So suddenly they were for, you know, sociopathic behavior just because Obama said that someone else might be able
to. Well, it's funny you should mention sociopaths, Tina. I don't know if you heard this, but Representative Stephen King of, no pun intended on the name, from Iowa, has recently come out in favor of dog fighting. So we know that people who are sociopathic have no empathy, and they also abuse animals in their lives. Now, granted, he's much later in life than the typical serial killer would abuse animals. But what do you make of that?
Well, Well, I feel like it's inappropriate to defame sociopaths by calling them Stephen King.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, he's an extremist. There's nothing. I mean, there's no way of mincing words. He has extreme positions, and he believes that there's some kind of like magic that went into the newspaper columns announcing the birth of the president. I mean, he doesn't represent anyone but people who shut-ins who are afraid of the big spaces.
Where does this come from, though? This need to always be the opposite of Obama.
I think that they lost their mojo when President Bush melted the world. I think that really has set them apart. Everything that they had been saying for the last 30 years, that trickle-down economics, that like deregulating the banks, that having a very, very low tax rate was going to somehow make things awesome. If you go back and read the Heritage Foundation, which I have, all of their reports about the Bush tax cuts and how they were going to make everyone's teeth straighter and we were going to have more jobs and more prosperity. And everybody was going to be happy and everything was going to be wonderful. And then, of course, that didn't come to fruition. They were all completely wrong. I think that and this is not a party that has any kind of contrition when they're wrong. They believe that apology is a sign of weakness.
Right.
Even though Mitt Romney essentially was apologizing for everything he ended up saying in Europe.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier in the show. I was saying earlier in the show that it'd be a lot easier for the president to stop apologizing for America if Republicans like Mitt Romney wouldn't go around embarrassing America abroad.
I think that Romney is so obsessed with apologies that he actually sees apologies where they aren't actually there.
Right.
Like Obama apologizing, because really, like every time he switches his position, it's apologizing for his previous position.
He does a lot of apologizing.
Yes, he does. He was very he had a very hard stance on being
Tina, can you stick around for the next segment?
Of course.
All right, we're going to talk more with Tina Dupuy, the syndicated columnist and my good friend, after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Carl Frisch, and we'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, more with Tina Dupuy about Mitt Romney's endless apologies.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program with guest host Carl Frisch. Connect with him on Twitter at Carl Frisch and visit carlfrisch.com for more information.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom today, tomorrow, and Friday. I am Carl Frisch. We're talking to Tina Dupuy. She's the syndicated columnist. She's got a great piece about how the Republicans can't just be everything that Obama's not. But before we get back to her, I want to take a quick call from Andrea in Tucson about a protest they're planning over the closing of their post office. Hey, Andrea, how are you?
Very, very well, thank you. I'm a candidate for the state legislature, and my husband's a retired letter carrier. And tomorrow at noon, I'm asking public elected officials and the media to come and help me deliver my 10,000 pieces of campaign mail that I'm sending out first class to bring attention to this issue. I think the first thing we have to do to grow jobs is to keep the jobs we have.
But why do that when, I really think, Andrea, that the big reason that this has become such a story or such an issue with Republicans is because it's a sign of how the government can work. The post office has run, in the black since they made it operate based on the sale of its products and stamps. And it wasn't until the Republicans forced through this legislation forcing them to maintain the health care costs of employees that will not be born again until 2057, the year 2057, that they ran into these problems. And to double down on that, they won't let the post office raise the price of stamps to make up for this difference.
Exactly. And the way it affects us in southern Arizona, from Tucson to down to the border in Nogales, they're planning on shipping our mail up to Phoenix. That makes no sense to
right.
me. because it'll delay medicine, it'll delay ballots, legal documents, and it'll really hurt our small businesses.
It will. And Andrea, before I let you go, where and when are you having people meet you?
Okay, this is Thursday, August 2nd at noon at the Cherry Bell Mail facility, and this is done in cooperation with the American Postal Workers Union. And please, you know, help us keep our mail processing center up and running, because
absolutely,
if they close, it would be the largest.
It would be horrible. I want to encourage any of our listeners out there in Tucson to join you. Rain, sleet, or snow, get out there and help our letter carriers. Let's get back to Tina Dupuy. Hello, Tina.
Hey, Carl.
So one of the other things that you wrote recently that I really enjoyed, that people can find at tinadupuy.com, your website. They can also follow you at Tina Dupuy on Twitter. That's D-U-P-U-Y. Is your piece titled "Olympians Represent the Best of Our True Efforts." Really making the compelling point that, you know, spinning off of the way that the Romney team took the president's comments about how business didn't get there just on its own out of context.
Right, how business owners didn't build bridges and
right,
roads to their businesses.
Right, certainly people that build bridges did, but they got the help in the contracts from the government.
Well, I think here's the fundamental problem with government. And when we talk about government, it's always kind of this abstract thing. When I was covering the Occupy movement, one of the protesters in Berkeley came up to me and she said, you know, we don't need the government. We can govern ourselves.
Right.
And I thought, what do you think the government is? And I think that's the fundamental flaw, is that the government is not we the people, that we don't feel there's ownership of the government, that it's some kind of abstract thing, and that corporations who we like because we see them on commercials and they seem wonderful, and NBC General Electric is now curing cancer, according to their, not that they're not paying.
Well, and we've also got these TV shows
cancer.
On NBC
right,
to soften us on corporate executives, where they hide out as their own employees.
Right, exactly. Corporate propaganda is now on corporate media. And so we have this wonderful association with corporate spokespeople and cartoons that are selling us things. And we love corporations because we've been kind of, you know, entrenched in that.
Hey, now.
We don't understand.
Corporations are people too, my friend. Well, and don't you think, I mean, this is precisely why the Republicans went after the Postal Service. Like mm-hmm. I've said many times already today, it was in the black for 30 years until Republicans put in these new rules. Which means it was a government service that worked.
Right. Well, and most Americans don't think that, you know, they think that the post office is actually autonomous. I mean, it doesn't take federal funding. It is,
right,
you know, it's funded autonomously through stamps, through people who use.
Which is
post
precisely
office.
The reason we're in this problem right now, is because Republicans have made them fund these health care benefits for people that won't be born for another 75 years.
Exactly.
And they can't raise the stamp prices.
Quite candidly.
And they can't raise the stamp prices to make up for the difference or to improve services. So it kind of puts them in a catch-22. Which makes it easier for Republicans to demonize an institution that's not turning a profit or working.
Right. Look how this is dying after we killed it.
Exactly. It's a, you know, they run them over with the car and they say, well, that person's dying. We should roll backwards over them to put them out of their misery.
Right. And then call them a wuss for dying.
Right. Of course, if a liberal did it, they'd get out of the car, give them their insurance information, put them in the ambulance, go with them to the ambulance and cover all the costs. But that's the difference between a liberal and a conservative in a knife fight. You know, we never go for the jugular as Democrats, because we don't want to offend anybody and we don't want to fight too hard against the Republicans.
And we avoid knife fights because we're too busy wringing our own hands.
It's true. So what do you think this all comes down to? I mean, we've been talking a little bit today about Mitt Romney's running mate. I mean, he had such a disastrous trip abroad that I'm convinced he will have to announce his running mate soon. Just to get these stories out of the papers. We've got like a minute left. Who do you think he's going to pick?
That's Pawlenty.
Tim Pawlenty, the former governor.
Tim Pawlenty, A, his name sounds like a yawn. but B, he's been running as VP ever since he stopped running for president.
Yeah, people might not even remember he was part of that field.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was the but he's been like out there campaigning. We haven't been paying attention to him.
I think he'd be a safe bet. He might be a little bit too moderate for the party, but as always,
Everybody's
Tina Dupuy, thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining us. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in, I'm Carl Frisch. And go cast your vote. Who is it going to be? Facebook.com/Carl Frisch.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, we're chatting with John Nichols, the Washington correspondent for The Nation, about the legacy of Gore Vidal. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. It is 34 after. I'm Carl Frisch, filling in for Tom today, tomorrow, and Friday. Thanks for joining us. You can find more about me at carlfrisch.com. We learned last night that Gore Vidal, the famed author with an amazing wit, had died. And I thought it'd be a good opportunity to bring on John Nichols from The Nation to discuss the legacy of Gore Vidal and his passing. Joining me now from The Nation, I've got John Nichols. Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, Carl. It's great to be with you.
Good. So I read your piece, and I just want to read a little bit for folks listening at home. Vidal, who died at age 86, was a great man of letters, an author, playwright, and groundbreaking essayist on the literature of his native land and the world. He was, as well, a bold and unrelenting challenger of the Puritanism that he regarded as the ugliest American tendencies. But I knew Gore as a political champion who ran inspired campaigns for Congress, who demanded that presidents of both parties be held account for high crimes and misdemeanors, who maintained a faith in democracy so deep and abiding that he called for a new constitutional convention to set right what was done wrong in Philadelphia and to realize the Jeffersonian requirement of revolutionary renewal. He was, as well, a scorching debater on topics political, as William F. Buckley learned to his chagrin in 1968. Tell us your perception and what you think Mr. Vidal's legacy is going to be.
Well, I think a huge part of his legacy will be his literary output. But people are going to be reading his novels, especially Julian, Burr, and Lincoln, well through the 21st century. His books will not fall by the wayside. They are absolutely exquisite works of historical fiction. And so he's got that going for him. But what I hope will be an even bigger part of his legacy is the connection he made to the founding of the American experiment. Gore Vidal, throughout his lifetime, reminded us, really pressured us to remember that the founders did not think they had settled everything. They didn't think that they made a country, locked it in stone. And
that's heresy. That's heresy. No, everything they said, they meant explicitly, and everything that they said that we might take a different way, we think they said explicitly. They didn't want anything to ever change from the way it was back then.
Well, if you ask Michelle Bachmann, that is definitely what she'll tell you, except, of course, that there's quite a bit of evidence that Michelle Bachmann never really read the founders.
Right.
Gore Vidal did. And what he took away from Jefferson and Madison and others, folks who he often criticized, was that they recognized their fallibility. They recognized their imperfection. And so, as Jefferson said, we needed a revolution every 20 years. And Jefferson also said that the greatest sin one generation could commit as regards another was to hand off a constitution and to expect people 100 years, 200 years down the line was simply accepted as a biblical document.
I think you just made a bunch of Tea Party heads explode.
I'm sorry, but, you know, look, the truth of the matter is a lot about Gore Vidal would have made a lot of Tea Party heads explode.
Sure. Absolutely.
Although he was a true patriot. And, in fact, anybody who claims to be a patriot really ought to read Vidal, because what they would find is this is a guy who loved America so much he was determined to set it right.
Well, you write, you also mention his essay from 72, in homage to Daniel Shays, where he wrote that voters that were preparing to reelect Richard Nixon you know, he basically said at any given moment, public opinion is a chaos of superstition, misinformation, and prejudice. How true are those words today?
Twice as true as they were then. You know, the interesting thing about Gore Vidal is that in many senses he was our strongest contemporary media critic. He was savage in his condemnation of major media for its dumbing down of the discourse, for its dismissal of alternative and unconventional ideas. He thought that our media, by and large, treated Americans as idiots. And he found that insulting because he believed that the American people, given good information and enough of it, would make the right decision. And so he was always very angry at the media. He was also very angry at both political parties. He tended to see both the Democrats and Republicans as one party, which he referred to as the property party,
right.
i.e. a corporate-controlled two sides of one coin. But most importantly, the thing that to him was most vital was his passionate opposition to the military-industrial complex. He felt that wars of whim and adventurism abroad ultimately destroyed democracy at home. And he believed that, we spent immense amounts of time talking about the war in Iraq, which he felt was an act so immoral that he actually suggested Dick Cheney and George Bush should be tried for treason.
Well, and you knew him personally, so how did the public persona of Vidal hold up against the man himself?
He's a much funner guy in private even than he was in public, and he was always considered to be one of the greatest wits of our time. He was absolutely scorching and hilarious. He was always on, too. I was out with him, maybe even having a drink or so, sometimes at 1, 2 in the morning, and we'd head back to his place and have some long conversation going on. And it would often go on until 3-4 in the morning talking, and he would still be knocking off fabulous one-liners.
What
a tremendous pleasure to be with.
What do you think your most fond memory of your time with him was?
Well, I can tell you exactly. We were at his villa in Ravello in Italy in 2002, and we got onto a conversation about whether he should run for president, because he said there were a lot of leftover Gore for president pins from 2000.
Right.
And he was actually a distant cousin of Al Gore. And so we got into this long conversation about whether he should run for president. And I have to be very blunt with you. He took it pretty seriously and started talking about what his platform would be and really strongly suggested he thought he could carry Iowa. And so that I remember that as just a delightful conversation and one that told you an awfully lot about the man. At the end of the day, he was a guy who wrote incredible novels and traveled the world, who was internationally respected, and yet he ran for Congress from upstate New York as a young man, and then as a somewhat older man, he ran for the U.S. Senate from California. He loved politics, and he didn't think that public intellectuals should stand on the sidelines. He thought they should get into the game, and to be honest, if he'd been slightly younger, I suspect he would have taken on George Bush in 2004.
Well, and he certainly, later in life, he must have found it remarkably, I know that, he said, all in all, I would not have missed this century for the world. He, as a gay man, he must have seen quite a change in this country over attitudes towards sexuality from the time he started writing and became a name to where he was when he died.
Yeah, he was a fascinating figure because, he didn't identify really as a gay man so much as a sexual outlaw.
Right.
He loved that term. He really loved to say that he was just somebody who was all for breaking the rules. And he didn't want to fit into any category. Although, in fact, he was a gay man who fell passionately in love with one of his fellow soldiers as a young man, wrote a beautiful book, The City and the Pillar, about some of those relationships and that passion. Went on to have a very, very long-term relationship with a gentleman who was just a terrific player. They were together for about 50 years. And yet at the same time, Gore was, he was fun and playful about all of this. In many ways, Gore Vidal was a perfect man of the 21st or maybe the 22nd century.
Yeah.
He saw way down the line to a point where maybe we wouldn't worry too much about, you know, what your sexuality was, and we, you know, kind of get to the core of the person. His standard was very, very simple. He loved, having a good time. He loved people who were smart and energized. And the funny thing is that, I remember I would talk to him sometimes about the rock group The Smiths.
Yes.
And you know, the truth of the matter is, he was very, very much like Morrissey. Or maybe Morrissey, was very much like him. Because remember Morrissey's song, "We Hate It When Our Friends Are Successful"?
Yes.
Well, Gore Vidal's great line is, "Success is not enough. Your friends must fail."
Right. Exactly.
And so he joked about it, you know, he joked about it, but I think he was actually relatively sincere in this.
Was he a Smiths fan?
I gotta be honest. I think he had a little bit more of the classical to him.
Yeah.
I know he heard The Smiths, and I know he was amused, especially by the. I think he liked the song "Just Charming Man" quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, it's one of my favorites.
I don't want to overemphasize that. I think Gore did not completely buy into the post-punk and new wave scene. He actually he spent a lot of time with Mick Jagger and folks like that. So he was around rock and roll.
Yeah, an absolutely remarkable life. Do you mind sticking around for a bit? I want to talk to you about 2012 as well.
Okay, yeah. From the sublime to the ridiculous.
Yeah, well, it's like one of those times when you'd love to hear what Gore Vidal would have to say about this mess in England with the Romney camp. But we'll stick around. We're talking to John Nichols from The Nation. And when we come back, we'll chat a little bit about 2012 before we let him go. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling for Tom this afternoon, today and tomorrow, and Friday. I'm Carl Frisch, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, we're going to finish things up talking about 2012, and I'll give you the results of the Mitt Romney running mate poll that we've been running. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, this final segment, 10 before 6 Eastern. I'm Carl Frisch, filling in for Tom today, tomorrow, and Friday. If you're just joining us, we're talking to John Nichols of The Nation. We've been chatting a little bit about the legacy of Gore Vidal, whom John knew. But I want to transition a little bit into 2012. John, this has just been a mess for the last 10 days for Mitt Romney, hasn't it?
It's unbelievable. I mean, if the Obama campaign had organized his trip to England, Israel, and Poland, they couldn't have achieved what Mitt did on his own.
Absolutely remarkable. I mean, it's as if they've been trying to come up with a way to stop talking about the taxes and went a little bit too far.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's a very good, it's a nice way of putting it, that in their effort to avoid the discussion about the fact that Mitt Romney is hiding his massive avoidance of taxes and the fact that he made millions of dollars when everybody else was trying just to get by and that didn't have to pay taxes on it. He went off to Europe to try and show that he was a great international leader.
Well, I actually have a different scenario that I think has some weight. I think one of the reasons that there's no reason he had to go to England the time he chose to when the Olympics were getting ready. I think he went to England for these meetings while the Olympics were happening so that they could go do their stuff with their fancy dancing horse without anybody asking questions about it.
Well, you're exactly right that
because if he'd gone a month ago, they'd have to fly back to England for the Olympics, and then we'd only be talking about their fancy dancing horse.
Well, it's a little part of it, but there's something more. This is the bottom line truth. Look at what he did in London and in Jerusalem.
Right.
He raised money.
Sure.
And we're talking millions of dollars from scandal-plagued bankers in London, the folks tied to the LIBOR scandal, which is a rate-fixing
absolutely
crime.
One of the biggest scandals of the year that is really getting a little attention.
Too little in America, that he's literally the people who were at the center of it came out and wrote $75,000 checks. And then he told them that he would not be tough on banks. He would he would begin to take apart Dodd-Frank and other regulations. So they got what they paid for. And then in Israel, it was even better, because the Romney campaign announced that he was not going to have time to meet with major Palestinian leaders.
Right.
Now, even if you oppose the Palestinian cause, if you're going to be president of the United States, you should know these people.
Right.
He said, oh, he doesn't have time to do that. But he did have several hours to spend with Americans who flew in to Jerusalem to give him money.
That he could have visited any time in the United States.
At any time. And, in fact, that people like Sheldon Adelson, who he's in the U.S. So, I mean, it was just the comedy of this whole thing. And then I thought it was capped off rather brilliantly by the visit to Poland, where, you know, he appeared with Lech Walesa, who has become an extremely right-wing political figure. And
when you say right-wing, you cannot compare the Polish right-wing to the American right-wing in any stretch of the imagination. It is far more severe.
Oh, yeah. So Lech Walesa is not exactly like this great player. But he appeared with Walesa, got the picture taken. And at the same time the picture was taken, Solidarność, the union, that Walesa was once a part of and that remains really the symbol of the opposition to authoritarianism and one of the great unions in the world, issued a statement saying, we just want people to know that we had absolutely nothing to do with inviting Mitt Romney to Poland because he is an opponent of workers and unions and is a destructive person whose policies would be very, very damaging to America. So even where he tried to associate himself with, you know, some wonderful historical tradition, he got blown up.
Well, I mean, and there's just all kinds of all the protocol issues, too. I mean, scheduling his speech in Israel during a holy holiday for the Jewish people and just one thing after another, the press telling reporters, you know, cursing them out. Letting reporters.
The big one was, you know, the best one was, this is one that didn't get much coverage because I don't think Americans fully, you know, are conscious of this. You watch James Bond movies.
Yeah.
And he was briefed by MI6.
Big deal.
Well, you're not supposed to ever talk about being briefed by MI6. The British government, you know, essentially keeps that on the down low. So
well, I was joking with my friends that they never let us hear the end of that sentence where he said, and then the officer from MI6 gave me these secret documents, which I put in my unlocked car at the back end of 10 Downing Street.
I handed it to one of my Soviet aides.
Right.
It was an incredible breach of protocol. So much so that some friends of mine who are British reporters said they didn't actually know under British law whether, you know, like taping him and reporting him as he spoke might be a security breach.
Well, John, I think Mitt Romney's going to have to get his stuff together, or he's going to have to announce his running mate. I really appreciate you talking with us today.
It's been a pleasure, Carl.
Absolutely. Yeah. John Nichols from The Nation, and I've got it. I've got them in. I've got the polling results. You've been voting at facebook.com/Carl. You've also been submitting your own nomination, so I'm going to read you the full list really quickly. In first place, followed by second, third, et cetera, we've got former governor Tim Pawlenty of Minnesota, followed by Rob Portman, senator of Ohio, Marco Rubio from Florida, John Thune from South Dakota, Nikki Haley from South Carolina, Clark Griswold from movies, Rick Santorum, Paul Ryan, John Kyle, Paul Ryan, Rick Snyder, Donald Trump, Sarah Palin, RuPaul, because he won't be able to pick between Ron and Rand, Susana Martinez from New Mexico, Rand Paul, Condoleezza Rice, Chick-fil-A, corporations are people too, my friend, Donald Duck, Bobby Jindal, Kelly Ayotte, lots more. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman Program, we'll have an interesting look at how politics and technology have merged and the impact of social networking on elections. Plus, a conversation with actor-activist Cal Penn about Romney's cringeworthy foreign trip. And the best of the rest of the news, along with your calls, right here on the Tom Hartman Program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, for We the People. Tag, you're it. Get out there, get active, and occupy something.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.